The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston, broadcasting for seven continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Monday Space Show program, and I am your host, David Livingston. Thank you very much for tuning in. Let me get through the announcements and on to our program. For those of you who would like to call us today and speak to our guest, who I will introduce in just a minute, it is area code 1-866-687-7223. Remember, that is a toll-free number. Again, 1-866-687-7223. You can also send us email at drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And then you can also post comments or questions on our blog, which is on our homepage, www.thespaceshow.com. Go all the way over to the far right, and you'll see the upcoming show menu. This is the first program listed, and that is our blog page and archive page. So open it up, and then scrolling all the way down to the bottom will give you comments. And you can post without logging in to Discuss, which is our comment program. You can post as a guest. And as soon as you make your post, I'll get a copy of it and can bring your questions or comments up at the applicable time during the program. But we do say that the toll-free number is the preferred way to reach us. And that, again, one more time, 1-866-687-7223. The website, thespaceshow.com, has the detailed brand new website newsletter on it, so do check it out. It details the programming for this week. And if you scroll down, it also shows the programs that are scheduled between now and the end of the year. Your guest suggestions are welcome. If you have any, we'd love to hear from you with them. So please send them in at drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. Everything we do is archived, so you can listen right off of our website or quickly download our programs. In the upper left menu, there's a store under support if you're interested in T-shirts and other items with Space Show logo wear on it. Also in the upper left menu, there is a Listen Live button. So this gives you details on how to listen to live Space Show programs. By the way, you should share this location with other listeners that may not be as familiar with the Space Show as you are. But we provide instructions for listening live and then listening to archives on the website, which are compressed MP3s, and then our podcast on different players, including iTunes and also Alexa with TuneIn. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate to email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. Do remember, we're a 501c3 nonprofit. Our nonprofit parent is One, O-N-E, Giant Leap Foundation.org, and we're a listener-supported radio program. So if you like what you hear and you appreciate the guests that are on and interacting with them, please do support us, because your support does make the Space Show possible. Remember, if you are a federal U.S. taxpayer, you do get a tax donation break for donating to the Space Show. And the same is true for those of you in California, as we're a California public benefit corporation. Our parent is OneGiantLeapFoundation.org. Check it out. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate to email me again, drspace@thespaceshow.com. We greatly appreciate your support, and it's what keeps the Space Show going. And we also have sponsor support for the Space Show, in addition to the individual support that I just mentioned. And the sponsors get a banner ad going across their website, our website, excuse me. And you can change your banner ad as often as you would like. And on full-length space show programs, as the one today, I read short sponsor messages at the beginning of the first and second segments. So for the first segment today, Northrop Grumman is a sponsor, and they're a leading global security company providing innovative systems, products, and solutions to government and commercial customers on a global basis. And they have capabilities and technologies that range from undersea to outer space and cyberspace. The Space Foundation is also a great sponsor, and they're at spacefoundation.org. In addition to their annual incredible conference and meeting in Colorado Springs at the Broadmoor Hotel every April, they have the annual Space Report, which you can now find on their website. And it details the economic condition and growth of the global as well as regional space industry, both government and private sector. So check it out. It's a Bible of the industry and a real honest, legitimate, arm's-length way to evaluate economically how space is growing and doing, both publicly as well as on the commercial and private sector. And for those of you interested in space settlement, the Space Development Network is a sponsor. They're an online organization that allows you as an advocate to join together with others to advance a plan for space development, which is space settlement. And they're looking for people with a wide variety of interest and skills. It's a free network to join, and you can get a lot more information and join it at spacedevelopment.org. And then finally, for the first segment, the National Space Society is our sponsor. In addition to their ISDC event, which is held around Memorial Day each year and is very, very large, in fact, they have other programs, white papers, many conferences. For example, they have one coming up in November on space settlement, a topic very close to importance and value for most space show listeners. So you can get a lot more information about the National Space Society at space.nss.org. And these are great sponsors, and if you can, participate with them in the work they do or support them somehow, because your support of them helps them support us. Our guest today is a returning guest and friend, Yalda Musavinia, and she now has what is called Space Decentral, and the website is spacedecentral.net, but she's also was a co-founder of the Space Cooperative, which is a program she has talked about in previous space show programs. And in her background, she was a senior product manager at Oracle, where she created solutions for the Project Portfolio Management Cloud Software Suite. Her career as product manager and designer for web platforms goes over 9 years. She has a Bachelor of Science degree in mechanical engineering from Berkeley, which is Cal, and astronautical engineering certificate from UCLA. And she has lots of other accomplishments, but I don't want to read about Yalda. I want to talk with her about her new venture. Do check her bio out on the Space Show website, because it is posted. Yalda, welcome back to the Space Show. How are you today?
Thank you for having me back. I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing great. A little hot upstairs here, but that time of year. So you have a new venture. I'm getting their emails through the newsletter, Space Decentral. What is that all about, and why the name Decentral? Help us out here.
Yeah, so in some sense, this is the same project that I talked about last time I was here. It's more that it was rebranded because our company is called Space Cooperative, and Space Decentral, it's supposed to be more of a, it's not tied to any single company, like a network that is independent, decentralized from a single organization running it. So that's why we wanted to separate it from Space Cooperative, so it wasn't as if people are like joining a single company, but where it has a more neutral brand where multiple companies can essentially collaborate, or people that aren't part of different companies. So we wanted to make it more clear that it wasn't, you know, space cooperative, this company's platform, but it's something where, you know, maybe like the network's name is Space Decentral, but we still have people that are part of Space Cooperative that are contributing to building it, and people from other companies can also contribute to building it, whether it's the software system or the projects or missions that are part of this network.
So help me out with my confusion. do people cooperate and help develop and build Space Decentral or Space Cooperative?
Space Decentral.
Okay, so specifically, yeah. What is Space Decentral? What does it do, or what is it about?
Okay, so right now, spacedecentral.net, it's a social network that, you know, connects people to collaborate on space missions, but the grander scheme or the grander vision of it is people that are part of Space Decentral will be developing a space program, and you would collaboratively, you know, vet proposals, advance proposals to, you know, if you like take it down the track of, say it's like a NASA mission, you know, from like pre-phase A, like concept studies to concept exploration. So, you know, as a group, you're taking an idea and you keep iterating on it until it's a fully fledged proposal in some sense. So yeah, Space Decentral, it is like the collective intelligence network where people decide and help develop space missions. In the beginning, you know, it is a lot of stuff that's more on paper, but then as the network grows, as the network attracts funding, the network can decide which, you know, projects or which missions to fund first. So that's like the longer trajectory out there. But right now, we are focused on, you know, specific projects at the moment.
So your long-term intent is to actually fund a real space mission that flies and operates. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
And over what timeline or what time period to get to, say, that first operational mission?
Well, right now we are working on a mission or a program called Coral, and the first mission that we are planning in this program, it's targeted for in the next 5 years, ideally. So that's the timeline, and this isn't for just like a CubeSat, but it's for something that actually lands on the moon. So if we did a CubeSat, that would probably be a shorter time frame. And we'll know by next year if the network decides a CubeSat-like mission, because we have a process right now called the Space Mission Activation Process, where you know, different people that hear about Space Decentral can propose a project, and then there will be a vote early next year to select up to three different missions. So there can be a smaller CubeSat-like mission that can potentially be proposed as part of that, that might, you know, launch sooner than the next 5 years.
So specifically, what is the Coral mission? How does it land on the moon? I'm assuming it's AI or robotic and a rover. Is that correct?
The ultimate goal of the Coral program is to, you know, utilize in-situ resource utilization technology, or ISRU, to process the lunar regolith to 3D print, essentially. So the first mission would be something like 3D printing a brick, but eventually you scale up the technology to 3D print like a habitat, like a structure, or maybe support for antenna, like telescope. So that's the current, trajectory of what we want it to do. And as far as the first mission, we are looking into utilizing commercial landers as part of the mission. So, for example, something by Astrobotic or maybe other lunar XPRIZE companies that, you know, end up having commercial capabilities for their landers. And the same thing as far as, like, rovers go as well. We haven't really decided yet if a mission will require a rover, or if it's just something that can come off the lander and kind of stay, you know, stationary within that region. So, so that is currently a design decision that hasn't been worked out yet.
So that's going to be pretty costly to get a rover to the moon, right? So you have a lot of fundraising to do.
Yeah, I mean, it will take probably over $10 million, right? So maybe $20 million, depending upon how many kilograms the payload is. I think the Astrobotic, I forget if it's like 1 million per kilogram or something like that. But, yeah, it will be costly. There are other options. I think maybe you just heard about the recent the Moon Race Challenge. Different people part of the network are talking about potentially applying for that challenge, and they would give you a free ride to the moon.
That's the Airbus program that they just announced.
Yes, yes. So there are different options like that the network can consider. It's like nothing is really set in stone as far as, you know, what's going to happen, and that's what we want. That's like the beauty of what we're trying to create is, like, let's create this network. Our goal is to, you know, get this payload on the moon. And as we learn we learn along the way what's the best way to do this. What are the best partnerships? Are there, like, different challenges? Like, can we do crowdfunding? Because our original mission and vision is about crowdfunding, but that's just, you know, one option. That's not the only way that it can happen.
You have an initial question already from Judd, J-U-D-D, in Tucson. And he says, the last time you were on the show, you were doing things and planning to finance, as if I recall, using cryptocurrency. Is that the same for Coro and what you're doing with Space Decentral?
Yeah, so we are still planning to do cryptocurrency. As far as Coral goes, we don't want to make it a requirement. So we do want to keep it open as far as what is the best path to fund Coral. So it's definitely open. I think that doing it through cryptocurrency still makes sense as far as like being able to really see how that money is being spent, for example. So if someone is crowdfunding it with cryptocurrency, there is more of a track record that the people that are working on the Coral program are, you know, sticking to what was in the budget. And if it needs to, like, increase the budget, there is all this transparency. So that is the beauty of cryptocurrency. And right now there are also a lot of kind of stable coins, like fiat or USD backed assets that are cryptocurrencies. So that is another option as far as, you know, if people didn't feel so comfortable, like, you know, using something more volatile like Ethereum to fund Coral, the group might decide, okay, well, we'll still do crowdfunding, but it can be converted into like an Ethereum based stable coin to ensure that the mission has enough funding and it's not affected by the volatile conditions of Ethereum, for example. So there are a lot of those decisions that we'll make as a community as we get closer to the fundraising path for Coral.
On recent Space Show programs, there seems to be interest in LEO commercial sort of business park-like space stations in equatorial orbits that Al Globus, who you met last year in Monterey, talked about. Does your organization have any flexibility or possibly longer-term goals to do something other than on the moon, or are you just loonies 100% all the way through?
Well, it's a decentralized network. So as our network grows, the ideas, the options grow for what we do and what everyone else wants to do. So that is what I think is the beauty of it. And actually, I just sent Al Globus an email a few weeks ago to see if he would submit like the first mission to get us to a space station in LEO, to our space mission activation process. I think he seemed open-minded to it. It was just a matter of time for him. And he said that that first mission would be something like a small sat for testing the radiation levels in LEO. It's not actually something that people would inhabit yet, but it's kind of like a, you know, gathering the data that we need to build up to that space station. So, so yeah, there are a lot of different different ideas that are non-lunar.
I've had lots of listeners. They're the ones who mostly know about this, not the guests that I invite. That have expressed interest in this based on Al's idea. And a guy yesterday called the Open Lines program and talked for 20 minutes on his plans on how to rent out modules like a business park would in a in kind of a LEO, Al Globus-like space station. So I know there's some interest in it. Whether it's interest that can materialize into something real or not, I'm not qualified to speak about that yet. But there is interest in it for sure. So if you're flexible, that might prove viable down the road a couple of years.
Yeah, so basically the way that we want Space Decentral to work is the people that do have all sorts of mission ideas, and they might not have, like, you know, all the engineers or people on the team to help take maybe like a paper napkin idea or an idea that's just on like one sheet of paper to maybe take it to the next level where it's, you know, thought out. There are trade studies to make, you know, the different decisions on the optimal mission design. But we want Space Decentral to be a place where, you know, ideas can be taken from like one page to a more advanced level. And then once it's at, you know, there's like a more like detailed proposal, there will also be a community of people that can help vet it and peer review it. And then once it's vetted, the network can decide, okay, which missions or projects do we want to add to our program? And then you have like this curation process. So you decide, okay, if we're going to start a campaign to fund one of these projects, like let's choose one, as a network. And then you decide on that. And then you can, you know, going the crowdfunding route, you can focus your publicity efforts on that one mission. And you have like this, this network that's all behind that. So it can, you know, with like using like the power of coordination and cooperation, where maybe there are people that might feel more passionate about like idea X, but you kind of give into it that, okay, as a network, we decided, on idea A. So let's work together and make that happen to then, you know, increase our bonds and our willingness to, you know, make these trade-offs and say, okay, well, the world decided this, or the rest of the network decided this, so let's like put our knowledge and our time behind that, and then we can kind of grow stronger in that way, instead of, you know, having like too many competing ideas, and then that essentially detracts from the crowdfunding nature. So we think that if we can focus, you know, as a network on a few different ideas, then if we're going the crowdfunding route, it can have like a greater impact than, for example, trying to crowdfund 15 independent projects. So, so that's part of the strategy of how we think crowdfunding for space missions can be more effective if you're doing it as a large network.
So I'm on your website, and you have these lots of projects listed, like Martian Spring, Spaceship Earth, Black Sky. So are the clearly it's broader than just going to the moon. So are these projects you've already established that you want to fund, or are these just suggested ideas? What am I looking at?
Yeah, so right now they're just suggested ideas. We have a few enhancements as far as what our website is going to look like, but in some sense we only have one active project right now, and that's Coral. And then the other ones are more like ideas. So in the future, there will be this better separation between what's active, what's an idea, and then the new proposals that are coming in the pipeline through our space mission activation process. So hopefully by the end of the year that will start to be more clear. But that's just, yeah, for other listeners on the show, an insight into how our network works right now.
How do people participate or put forth a suggested mission? How can they get involved in this? What do they have to do?
Yeah, so basically there are a few ways right now, depending upon the skills and what someone's looking for. If they just want to start working on a mission with the community, CORAL is the best way to do that. And if you, let's see, I'm trying to see the best way. I think on our blog, if you go to our blog, there's an article that says Introducing CORAL, and you can read more about it there. And also at the end of all of our recent blog posts right now, there's a sign-up form to join CORAL. So that's one way to do it. And then you can kind of keep updated on our weekly meetings for CORAL, which happen Mondays at 8 p.m. Pacific time. So that's one way. The other way is the Space Mission Activation Project that I was talking about. And if you click the Propose Project button on our homepage, that tells you more about the Space Mission Activation process. But what we're suggesting for that is to first post your idea on our forum and what skills you're looking for, and then you have to prepare a proposal by December 2nd. And we just published the guidelines for that too that are on our blog right now. So if you go to spacedecentral.net, click the blog link. If you start to read through those, you'll see better instructions for how to get involved.
Okay. And does it cost anything to get involved, or you just join up and get busy?
No. Yeah. No. There's no cost. Yeah, there's no cost, I guess, at this moment. In the future, since we're doing things with cryptocurrency, there might be a cost to submit a proposal depending upon how many submissions we get. Because, for example, if there aren't that many proposals, a fee isn't required. A fee likely wouldn't be required, but if our network grows to a stage where, we have limited time to review proposals, we might use a fee as a way to filter out how serious people are about their ideas and about working on them. So that's something that, that we'll come to terms, as a community, when to have these costs. And it's never going to be something that I as a single person decide, but as you get involved with Space Decentral, you can also help with proposing different fee structures as we grow. So we want to make that an open and transparent process when they come. But yeah, there's no cost to be involved now. Whenever we do launch Space Decentral as a decentralized autonomous organization that operates on the blockchain, and if people want to help govern the network more, be more involved in the decision-making processes for how everything functions, that will require a membership-type fee. But you don't have to pay that if you're not interested in the governance. If all you're interested in is working on the projects, then that's not required. And you will also earn cryptocurrency by working on the project. So it's more like we want to pay people for helping as opposed to take their money for helping. So ultimately it's more the reverse operation.
Do you intend, so if somebody wants to work on a project, let's say going to Mars, is it too premature to do that because you want to do CORAL and something else first, or can they start up through Space Decentral and do something vis-a-vis Mars, for example?
Yeah, there are no rules and restrictions right now for the location of missions, and the Space Mission Activation process, as I keep mentioning, that is the best path right now to propose different ideas, which can be Mars, Leo, I don't know about Alpha Centauri, but I guess there's like the breakthrough star shot. There can be smaller probes and stuff like that that people can propose as well. So there's no restriction really. We're not trying to set any rules or boundaries as far as how the network develops, because we really want to see, what if we grow a network and it's the majority of people are passionate about Mars? We don't want to restrict them to work on coral. We want there to be this autonomous nature of how projects are selected. So we want to have more of an open slate or something as far as how that goes.
What are you hearing so far? Because Space Decentral's been up and running for a couple of months now, right?
Yeah, you mean what are we hearing as far as the different ideas?
Yeah, or feedback from people. What information are you getting in, or are you getting project ideas?
We are getting some ideas. We have a lot of other people that are part of the company and helping with it. Susie Bianco, she's leading the space mission activation process, so she has a better idea on what the current projects are in the pipeline, but I can try to look it up and get back to you. But there are different, I know there are a few other lunar ones. There might be some, I would have to get back to you because I'm not monitoring everything space related right now. A lot of my focus at the moment has been on the software side.
George is in Las Vegas, and he says, in terms of these missions, are there any technical requirements for what is being proposed? Like, do you have to buy a capable launch from, say, SpaceX or maybe a smaller company? What are the technical qualifications for proposing a mission?
For proposing a mission, there are no requirements as far as, you mean, does someone already have to have a launch contract secured, or is that
no? I'm assuming, and George, if I'm doing you an injustice, you can email me back again, but I'm assuming he means, does the person have to pretty well have the technical specs worked out and say, we're going to use a Falcon 9, or we're going to use an Electron from New Zealand, or we're going to do this or that, because that's technically what we need. So do they kind of need those technical specs in advance to propose a mission?
No. So at the activation, at the proposal stage, that's not a requirement. So the assumption is that will be worked out after it's selected. It just needs to be, there just needs to be enough information for, our network to vet that it is feasible. But as far as selecting your launch provider or what date it's going to launch, those sorts of details are not required. And if you read our blog post about the space mission activation process, there's a link to the guidelines there, and that provides all the details for the information that we're looking for. It's more higher level type questions, but the goal is that after the mission is selected, the network helps with making it more detailed to answer those questions.
So you have another email, and this is Carol in Seattle. And Carol said, is there an age appropriateness for getting involved? This might be something that my daughter, who is starting high school this year, would be interested in. She really loves space. Is there any kind of age appropriate level that you can think of that might be good for a high school student?
Well, right now, most of the people that are part of CORAL, for example, are either in college. We have all the way from college to retired aerospace professionals. I don't see why someone in high school couldn't get involved. Some tasks that I could see, someone younger starting to help with can be even simple tasks, like maybe they help, take minutes during our meetings, and then, there's a lot of like basic math and stuff, or we're also doing research on finding you know, research papers and cataloging them. So there are tasks like that that I think you know, much like people in high school can start to help with, and then through that they can you know, build up to doing the more advanced tasks that might require deeper knowledge. But I think that the beauty of our network is the broad range of levels of expertise that we do have. So there can be like this, you know, mentorship type of relationships that are built too.
And you're global, right? You're not limiting participation to the United States. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. We're global, and so that does add, of course, these complications as we get to the stage of missions having more technical designs as far as, you know, maybe some of like the advanced software that's going to be developed, or, you know, anything that's export control restricted. But at the early stages of research and doing the general mission design, we don't see any reason that we would need to restrict things. But we are going to, you know, we'll have to have better processes in place, because that's going to have to essentially be a vote that the network does once it does get to that, okay, we're starting to breach export control territories. We need to decide which entity in the network is ultimately going to be responsible for this mission. So that's why we want to grow a network with a lot of different companies globally. And then as our network, you know, as we grow in nationalities in different regions, there can be different companies that essentially propose to build out the mission. And, you know, you start to decide, okay, what's best based on cost, you know, proximity to the launch site. So different things like that can come into factor once it actually gets to the stage where the knowledge is starting to be export control restricted.
I'm looking at your team, which is listed by person on the website, and I know several of the people, and a couple of them have been on the space show. Do you have like a headquarters or an office, or do you guys sort of communicate and stay in touch remotely? How does the structure work to get Space Decentral working?
Yeah, so right now we do not have a headquarters. We do everything remotely. For Space Decentral, we use a chat communication tool called Riot. And if you click on the chat link on our website, you can join our different chat rooms that we have there. And then, like I said, for Coral, we have a Monday night meeting, and that's also a teleconference using this platform Zoom. And for task management, we're using GitHub, which is usually used for, you know, open source software development. But since we're doing open source space missions, and since it costs you know, nothing for someone to sign up for a GitHub account, that's the best tool that we're using right now. So, you know, we're selecting services where it doesn't cost any, you know, you don't have to pay for any subscription to use this chat or that task management service, because we want to, you know, reduce the barriers to entry.
Fascinating. So it's all sort of remotely done technically with all sorts of computer software and tools.
Yeah, that's how it is going to be, but we think that, for example, for Coral, there's going to have to be a decision soon as far as where we start developing the prototypes. So that might be something like Los Angeles, because we have a lot of the people in the network there. But there's also nothing that restricts kind of parallel prototyping to happen. You know, it's just like a funding question, right? Like how much can we afford as a group as far as where we want to start to, you know, build things out, or it's also dependent on potential like lab partnerships that we can get as well. So if there's anyone, you know, listening that's at a university somewhere, it might want to collaborate with us on some of our missions. I mean, we're definitely looking for lab partnerships. We just haven't really put the feelers out there yet.
Now, when I think of lab partners, I'm thinking of like a scientific lab or something like that. So what exactly do you mean with you're looking for lab partners?
Lab, like, space mission type lab, or, you know, spacecraft development labs. So, yeah, I guess universities that or have, like, 3D printing technology, or, you know, materials testing. So, yeah, for example, for coral, that's going to have to, like, what we want to do is we're going to use some lunar simulant. We have to decide what the additive manufacturing method is, and then start to do tests using that additive manufacturing method on the lunar simulant to see what sorts of results we can get. So that's one example of something where we would need some sort of facilities and equipment to start to do the testing.
Pretty interesting. And if you were to see this develop according to your best laid plans, where do you think you'd be 5 years from today?
5 years from today, we have a payload on the moon. It's 3D printing. We've successfully 3D printed a brick or some other shape, and maybe our network has 100,000 active contributors. We have an actual, like, program laid out of missions for the next 10 years, and partnerships, with different universities, and maybe we have a partnership with, a couple launch providers as well. And yeah, an international network. Hopefully we have one location on every continent. Maybe we have a facility in Antarctica as well. So yeah, I mean, I guess if we are successful with what we want to accomplish, it's like we have created a, you know, we'd be one step closer to actually creating a global space program where it's easier for everyone around the world to collaborate on space missions together, and we've cracked how to do it without breaking any laws.
So you have ambitions. Are those future plans on the website, or they're internal?
As far as where we see the company 5 years from now, it's not internal from a private sense. Maybe just in a, we haven't really had time to write about this yet sense.
ambitious plans, Yalda. We're actually pretty close to our halfway point. So I think what I'm going to do is take the break here when we have a chance to do that, and then we'll come back in 3 minutes. So listeners, we will be back. We can take your calls if you have access to the phone. 1-866-687-7223. Email, of course, is still welcome. drspace@thespaceshow.com. So don't go anywhere, and Yalda and I will be back in about 3 minutes.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
The mission of the Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
And welcome back, everybody, part two of our Monday program. And we're talking about spacedecentral.net with Yalda. And we have a couple of sponsor messages to read, and then we'll get back to talking to Yalda. Our sponsors for the second segment include the Integrated Space Analytics Plan called the Space Plan. And this is the highly detailed development chart showing the path to becoming a spacefaring race. See how technologies and destinations build upon one another. Explore hundreds of individual elements in more detail and their website, thespaceplan.com. And if you go to the website version, you can open up the different cells for a lot more information. You can also get your own full-size space plan poster. Comes in two versions, an academic and a regular. It's very inspiring. You can frame it or you can hang it on the wall or a door. And get all the information you need at thespaceplan.com. And then the AIAA is a sponsor, the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. They have more than 30,000 individual members. About 88 countries or more are represented, and 95 or close to 100 corporate members are there, and they all work in the field, so they're helping to shape aerospace's future every day. Their website, AIAA.org, they have 5 forums or conferences a year, and you should attend some of them. And their networking is par excellence. It's just incredible. So you can get more information. You can even join as a non-engineer at a very low price. That's what I do. And their website is AIAA.org. And then our final sponsor for the second segment is Celestis. So they are still the only proven provider of Memorial spaceflight services in the world. And most of us don't have an opportunity to go to the moon in our lifetime or even to have the opportunity to go to orbit. But Celestis can make that happen, although it's a memorial format of making it happen. You don't get to go as a spaceflight participant. But if you have a loved one that has passed on and you want to honor or memorialize, you can send part of their cremated ashes or DNA to space. You have choices of a suborbital mission out of New Mexico, orbital out of Vandenberg or the Cape, Lunar, which is going to fly later this year, possibly out of New Zealand, and maybe someday beyond Leo or even to Mars. You can also send your DNA with that of your loved one. So if you're interested, you need to contact Celestis.com for more information, schedules, and things like that. For the sake of transparency, I am their customer. I've done 3 flights with my mom and my 2 dogs. And they're a great company to work with, really wonderful people. And again, contact Celestis.com if this interests you. So, listeners, we're talking about spacedecentral.net with Yalda. And I wish I'd had the recording going during the break, because we covered a lot of really interesting comments and questions that Yalda offered us. I'm going to see if I can summarize a little bit of it. So Yalda, you and your fellow Space Decentralite staffers or team members believe that you have a concept that is in a structure that people want, because they want to see us becoming spacefaring, and your idea takes projects and missions that are plausible with having been oversighted and vetted, and coming up with a structure to possibly bring them to life. Is that correct?
Yeah, essentially, I think, you know, people have had all sorts of different ideas over the past few decades for different space missions or how we can make humanity a spacefaring civilization, but there hasn't been a structured approach for how we pool all these ideas, how we vet them, curate them, and then help each other develop them into something that's more, you know, something that is achievable. So we want to finally create that platform where this can happen, and it's not restricted to the moon, it's not restricted to Mars, it's, you know, completely open and open for anyone in the world to collaborate and propose and then naturally evolve, you know, different centers around the world, essentially.
Have you ever gotten any feedback, or do you have any participation from NASA?
We haven't talked to people that are currently working. We have people that used to work at NASA or might actually work at some current NASA centers, but we haven't really talked to people from like a program level perspective as far as collaborating goes. But we're involved in a hackathon and we're in Orlando this year, the NASA Space Apps Hackathon. But that's not like also like any fully official like NASA line, but as Space Cooperative, we have proposed a concept to the NIAC track. So that's the other thing that we do as an independent company is we'll also try to get grant funding from NASA for some of the different ideas. They might not be on Space Decentral, but that is a path that we are trying to build. But that can also be something that we do with Coral as well for the different grant opportunities that come about. So that's definitely something that's, you know, open as a possibility. And I think as we grow the tools on our network as well, we'll be at a better stage to approach companies or entities for more direct relationships and partnerships.
Have you already applied to NIAC as a project, or is it something you're planning to do?
Yeah, so we applied for the Step A, and that's for a project that Mark Cohen is leading for, I think he was calling it Planetary Quarantine Facility for the Deep Space Gateway or whatever new name they're calling that project. So that is something that we submitted the Step A, so we're waiting to hear back about the Step B probably in the next few weeks.
You told me you hadn't done like any a formal marketing survey or anything like that to say this is what they believe A, B, and C, they meaning the people out there in the potential market. So this is basically what you're determining through your own collective experiences of your team members as well as yourself who have been in the space field for several years, correct?
As far as people wanting something like what we're building?
Right, for Space Decentral. Supplying a need to people that are interested in wanting to see us become spacefaring.
Yeah, we haven't done any direct market survey, but I think that there are a lot of market indications. Like, for example, if you think of ESA's, like they talk about Space 4.0 a lot, or like the Moon Village as an international initiative and how that's gaining a lot of traction, or you know, it's gaining some traction at least. I mean, they have presence at different conferences and they're organizing them. So, and then through the people that have joined our network, like if in reviewing like the different conversations that come up in chat or the forum, it's very obvious to us that people do want this and they do want to be a part of it. So it's, you know, we just haven't been directing that much effort into marketing anymore to further grow our network, but through like the small sample size we have now, we think that there is a strong indication that the world wants this. So we're going to start to try to take it to the next level in the next few months to connect more people and spread the word about what we're doing.
You do have a newsletter, and people can sign up for that on the website as well, correct?
Yes. You can sign up for that. If you go to our homepage and you scroll to the bottom, there's a little data entry box where you can enter your email address, and then you'd be signed up for our newsletter.
And everything else that's being marketed right in the world. So I want to switch a little bit because when I called you earlier today to test phone lines, You did a great job of impressing me with your global speaking arrangements. So are you, I failed to ask you, but I want to know, when you go to Germany, when you go to Prague and elsewhere on speaking engagements, are you speaking about Space Decentral or more general about becoming spacefaring, or are you not even speaking about the space topic?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I'll be speaking about Space Decentral, but the three conferences I'm speaking at, they're blockchain-related conferences. So the first one is DevCon 4 in Prague, and it's Ethereum's yearly conference. And Ethereum is the second largest, you know, blockchain or cryptocurrency after Bitcoin. So yeah, that's at the end of this month in Prague. And then in early November, I'm speaking at a conference in Berlin called Blockchain for Science. And then at the end of January, I'm speaking at this organization, Aragon's conference in Berlin. Sorry, that was the end of January. And that's called Aragon. And Aragon is not just a platform or an organization, but they're a movement too that's very, aligned with kind of creating autonomous, decentralized networks where you can have this, open collaboration and incentivize, collective action, whether it's for a space organization or for creating a new society or a company that's using fresh, advanced mechanisms that are outside of traditional, like, corporate structures. So Aragon, at the moment, their project is developing a software that works with the Ethereum blockchain to enable, for a network to make decisions and, transfer capital based on decisions that people are making. They awarded us and a few other people that are part of our part of this project, like from this company that we collaborate with, Giveth, or another decentralized organization that we collaborate with. So they awarded us a grant to develop these planning tools that we proposed. So Space Decentral will be using these tools, and that's how we'll start to track the work that people are putting into the space mission. So the goal is if we get really great at project management and at task planning, you can have roadmaps for these different projects in the early stages, and as people are volunteering their time to completing the tasks, there is a record for the work that people have put in. So let's say that an idea does evolve into being a separate business entity, then all of your time, in some sense, is tracked. So if it does become profitable, then it's transparent, like who gets a slice of the pie, or if it ends up spinning off into a traditional company with equity, it becomes transparent, like what each person's percentage of equity is. So we think that's the innovation that can also encourage this more collaboration and encourage people to volunteer more and be open-minded with it, because it's not just it doesn't have to just be people developing missions for the altruistic nature of it, but there can be that combined incentive, like, hey, yeah, we all are interested in the higher level goal of humanity becomes spacefaring, but hey, if we can increase profit or actually have like cash flow independent of crowdfunding, then that's even better, right? So that's why with the blockchain based collaboration tools that we're building, there will be this transparent record of the work that everyone has put in, but that is dependent on being really great at project management, task management, and being able to properly estimate, the work for the different tasks.
Okay, and you have an email from Larry in Los Angeles who says, David, I'm at work, so I'm not using the phone. I'm interested in what I think you're describing as a growing trend globally that somehow thinks that being in space or developing space is good for humanity. Can you help us to understand where that comes from? And how is that a growing global movement? What is there about that that is reaching people all over the world, even countries that don't have space programs or a commercial industry capable of doing anything in space?
Yeah, so I can definitely talk more about that. I think that, I started to really become passionate about space after I watched 2001 A Space Odyssey. And what intrigued me a lot was this, like, the unknown, essentially, like how much we don't know about life, how much we don't know about, like, even like how we got here, and how we won't really find out until we explore. So, like, right now, I guess, like, on Earth, we're very focused on, like, a lot of the problems that we have here, but I feel like we need to actually look outside of Earth more to try to solve them, because a lot of them are resource-based, for example. So if a lot of problems on Earth are resource-based, you know, we know that there are a lot of resources in outer space. That's a much larger space than Earth. So why aren't we thinking outside the Earth more to try to solve those problems? Because it's difficult, right? There's a lot of technological challenges. It's not, financially. It's not affordable to, for example, solve our resource issues right now by bringing them back from space, right? But I think that it's also that challenge that can drive people and motivate them to try to solve that. How do we make it so it is financially viable to solve our resource issues with off-world resources? So I think a lot of these different ideas start to add up. It's like our natural curiosity as humans to explore and to want to know more. If we solve the resource issue with outer space resources, that is also like another milestone for humanity, another milestone for how much knowledge, you know, we have as a species. So that's just better, right? It's like the more people that can participate in this, you know, like STEM or STEAM type of work, the better that is for the world. So since space is inspirational, it can be something that inspires more people to have like the technical skills, the engineering skills. And the more people on Earth that have that, like the more advanced you are, like as a civilization, as a nation, or as a species as a whole. So I see that, you know, everything makes sense as far as why space should be our focus as a species.
And when
outer space, rather.
When you travel internationally and you speak with your peers, or you go to these conferences that you mentioned a few minutes ago, the people in Germany or in Prague or wherever you may be going, you're finding people that think alike, even though they may not have access to a space program or an entrepreneurial program or anything like that. They're still getting somehow the same message that you just talked about for the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, I actually think that more and more, especially kind of the newer space entrepreneurs as well, like this idea of creating a network for people to collaborate. I think that's starting to become like more and more common. Especially like, you know, people that have like grown up on the internet, they're now becoming like entrepreneurs. So we're all like, oh yeah, like the internet can like solve everything, right? So I think that it's starting to become more acceptable that, since a lot of us have now grown up being connected to people around the globe, so it just starts to become logical. Okay, well, we grew up, you know, on social networks. Maybe we can use social networks to actually solve the next level of problems, right? So it's like now we have this infrastructure that didn't really exist, you know, 20 years ago. Okay, so that opens up the possibilities for, you know, new innovations and new ways to actually get stuff done.
So far for Space Decentral, is there a large international component, or is it just being discovered and growing?
What do you mean by a large international component?
Well, of participants, people that you hear from, or anyone that may have signed up or anything like that, are you seeing people from other countries getting involved yet, or is it still in the early days?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So we have, you know, people from India, from Estonia, Sweden, and then a lot of people from America are on, you know, student visas in America from other countries. So there's a very international component right now. We hope to keep growing in that nature.
Jane is in Portland, Oregon, and she says, I'm curious to know if in your travels and conference speaking, if you get an opportunity to talk to much older people and how they might differ in their attitudes towards space and what you're talking about than what your peers think. Can you comment on that at all?
Well, we actually have much older people that are working on CORAL right now, and that's our open source lunar mission. Like, we have some people that have retired from NASA that are working on it, and, you know, they're in some sense not everyone that's working on CORAL right now fully understands the blockchain part of how things will work, but they are very open-minded to this open collaborative nature of the mission, as we've been, you know, working on it for over 12 weeks and some over 10 weeks in some sense. And, you know, we've gotten feedback from the team and people are, you know, excited about it. And like, there's momentum that's gaining. So I think that this isn't something that we see as just for younger folks, but I actually think that probably the ideal demographic of the network, just based on what's emerging, is probably likely going to be people that are students, like, you know, undergrads, graduate students, and then the retired aerospace professionals. It's just because, like, they have the time, and even if you're a retired aerospace professional, like, working on space missions, it's not just, like, work. It's, like, it's a hobby. It's something that likely still exists with you after you retire. And then the students, they're like, you know, younger, hungry, they want to learn. So it's actually the synergy between these two that can really help take things to the next level. But that doesn't mean that people in between or people younger can't participate, but just based on what we've seen so far, is this that seems to be sort of the target. The target demographic. But we do have people that are participating that are, like, currently working for, like, Lockheed Martin or Boeing. It's really a very diverse group that we have right now. As far as when I'm speaking, the blockchain type conferences, that's also I think that a lot of people in the blockchain community, they're in their, you know, mid to early 20s. Mid to late 20s, but there are, you know, other people. I mean, I would say it probably doesn't go beyond, probably most people are under 50. But I have spoken at a lot of space conferences before, too, and that was more what I did in 2017. That's where I first met David at the Starship Congress. And then I spoke at IAC a few times, and yeah, I think that there are still people that of all sorts of ages that were open-minded to it.
Another email. Catherine is in Chicago, and she says, I'm one of the older people that David has somewhat alluded to. I hate showing my ignorance, but I do need to ask you for a definition. I hear the term blockchain all the time. You've mentioned it. I don't have any clue what you're talking about. Can you please take a couple of minutes and explain what you mean by blockchain?
Yeah, so blockchain. I'm not sure if you've heard of Bitcoin, but essentially Bitcoin was the first blockchain. And the beauty of it is it's a new way to transfer value that doesn't require a central authority like the federal bank or like the central banking system. But it is actually, certain that whenever I'm sending this like fraction of a Bitcoin to you, that I actually sent that money to you, because everything is maintained on a public ledger. So it's kind of like if all of the bank records were out into the public and a distributed network of computers are maintaining the integrity of that ledger. And it does that, like for Bitcoin, it uses a proof of work consensus algorithm that is highly dependent on like electricity and your like how much electricity you're burning. So in some sense, you could think of Bitcoin as mining electricity. So since there's like a cost to entry to actually mine the Bitcoin. So and Bitcoin is scarce because there's only going to be like 21 million of them. So that's how the value is determined for that. So blockchain is a technology that essentially can be the system that the system for these new currencies that are decentralized and not you don't have to rely on a single authority to say that's true, that is how much value that was transferred. So I guess how does this fit into space decentral? Because the work that people are going to be doing on the network, it will be tracked on the blockchain, and you won't have to trust one company to say that work was completed. You just have to as participating in the network, and whenever you complete a task, essentially, since the tasks will be attached to these smart contracts that communicate with the blockchain, essentially, there is that integrity that, okay, this person did complete the work for that task. There's a public record for it. It can't be hacked as long as the blockchain remains secure. And it's transparent, how the work for that project was completed. So a blockchain, essentially, it can allow a network to survive beyond a company surviving. So say Space Cooperative, it's like we started Space Decentral, but since we're creating it as this open and collaborative nature, we don't want it to be dependent on our company for Space Decentral to survive. We want it to survive, into the 22nd century and beyond. And for that to happen, we can't just say like, oh, it's all going to be stored on a traditional database that's like on web servers. Because if it did that, if something happened to Space Decentral, then this vision will not, I mean, if something happened to Space Cooperative, then this vision will not prolong. So we want to do what we can to ensure that this vision can last and survive, for as long as possible. So the blockchain is one component of that system. But it's not, I mean, it can still, function without it, but we think that having it open and decentralized is a factor for, increasing the chance of success, to make it, open, as open for participation as possible and as transparent as possible. Like whenever funding comes in, that, everyone knows that it is going for that project. Everyone knows, how much of it was spent on the different resources. So if we can have a transparency, there will be more trust from the globe that, the people in this network are doing things as they propose, and hey, it's working. And if it's not working, it's open for other people to propose how it can, how it can improve because it's all transparent. But like I said, you know, a few hours ago, there's a certain point where you have to limit the transparency due to different regulations. But we think that there is still a lot that you can make out in the open, like a lot of nonprofits do, and we intend to do that.
So is the blockchain, the way you're using it, sort of like the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange?
I don't know if it's like that exactly versus maybe think of something like Wikipedia. Like Wikipedia is this public resource that a lot of us rely on that people around the globe contribute to. But all the data right now is stored on a single server right now, and it's also all controlled by the Wikimedia Foundation. It's just like controlled by one company. So in some sense, this is not there. If something happens to Wikimedia Foundation, and I think that today, like, the solution might be, okay, like, maybe it will be something that we move all this data onto a more like decentralized network to ensure that it can, you know, still operate without it being tied to a single entity. And if you had it on something more of like on a blockchain or distributed network, then you can ensure that that data persists. I don't know if like Wikipedia is the best example, but as far as like the like explaining like the blockchain more, like right now, like I said, it is used or it has been made a proponent because of currency, but now there is also this application of building software on top of the system to make applications where you can transfer the currency with those applications. So since our network requires, you know, this value transfer, that's why we will be, you know, utilizing the blockchain as far as just think of it more as like a technical solution to enable what we want to build, where it's easy and fast to transfer money around, and it makes sense since we're creating a global network as well to use like a currency that's not just tied to one country, one state, you know. So if you agree as a collective, okay, we're going to use Ethereum or we're going to use like the FTL token, then there is like it's much easier to account for things, essentially. It makes everything much simpler.
So a couple of months ago, we were hearing on the financial news, those of us who actually listen to the financial news, that Bitcoin's value was dropping and going to hell in a handbag really quick, and there people were having losses, and it was a big problem. What happens when that happens, vis-a-vis the blockchain? And I know there's other cryptocurrencies other than Bitcoin. I don't know if Bitcoin has had a substantial recovery or a total recovery or no recovery, because I don't have any and I don't follow it. I don't even know how to buy it. But what happens when the market goes to hell for the cryptocurrency, which is what was being reported several months ago?
Yeah, I mean, right now it's still, you know, new early technology, and there is going to be this volatility because, I think not even like 10% of the world has it or knows how to acquire it. And last year, what happened was it did start to become, you know, in the news more, and retail investors, as they call them, started to get more into it. So the price went up a lot, but I don't think a lot of the people that bought it fully understood what they were buying or what they were getting into. So there was a correction that happened this year, and it's still like, I think like Bitcoin's been kind of stable-ish for the past few months. But yeah, I mean, there's no good way right now to predict like what the price is going to be by the end of the year or or the next 10 years, but it is something that, you know, people are still using. And for Ethereum, it's something that people are, you know, the developer community that are building Ethereum-based applications, like, keeps growing and growing further. It's just, like, at the current stage of how the applications are, it's, like, it's not as easy to use. You know, people are still kind of not fully, you know, they don't really know everything you need to do to acquire it, so there is that hurdle that still exists. But I think in the next couple years, it will start to become much easier, just like having a PayPal account, for example. But yeah, I think it's still like something that people are like, oh, is cryptocurrency just a scam? Or, you know, there are so many headlines right now that you don't really even know what to trust or what to think. But I think that it's something that's going to, it will persist. The price is something that I don't think people should worry about be concerned about that much. But I think understanding how this might fit into our futures is important. And then, yeah, I guess it's like sometimes people ask, how does the blockchain work? A common response sometimes is, well, do you know how the internet works? Do you know how money works? You know, it's like we use like this technology and we don't fully understand how it works. But I think it's good to just generally understand like the application of it, because understanding how it fully works takes a lot more reading and investment of time to understand all the parts of the system.
We're down to about 5 minutes or so before the program ends. What have we forgotten to talk about, or what should we have talked about, or what would you like to talk about, or what should our takeaways be, or what do you want to say for closing comments or pearls of wisdom?
Let's see. I mean, I feel like we definitely covered a lot. I guess the next step would be, yeah, if you want to be involved, definitely. I mentioned a lot of different methods at the beginning of the show, but yeah, just going to our website and reading our blog, it will give you more insight into the different projects we have and how to get involved in those. And then I also mentioned we have the deadline for proposals for our first space mission activation process. That's December 2nd. And also, if you want to help evaluate some of those proposals, you can also, if you don't have an idea or you'd rather just help with the vetting process, you can apply to be an evaluator. And that's also detailed in our blog post about the Space Mission Activation Process Guidelines. Yeah, that's the other mention. Yeah, I'd love for more feedback on what we're doing too. You can feel free to send that in our contact form on our website.
So if they want to reach you or anyone else on the team, they use that contact form on the website?
Yeah, I think that contact form is good, or my first name at spacedecentral.net works too, yeah. Space.coop.
you gave it out on air. Well, we'll see what happens. How big a team do you have? Do you have a lot of team members working with you?
Yeah. I mean, for a space cooperative, like we have quite a few active members. You know, about like 10 members right now. And then for Space Decentral, as far as like the Coral team goes and the network. I mean, there seems to be like maybe like people that are active, like probably like 20 or so, which is probably about how much we can handle right now as far as coordinating 20 people. It's a lot of work. We are actually looking for people that are interested in project management and that type of people that are very interested in project management. That's always a useful task for what we're trying to build as a network so we can scale.
And when you said earlier that you usually work with software, are you writing and creating software, or are you working with commercially available software that your organization is using?
Yeah, so spacedecentral.net, that's something that we have developed and written ourselves. But we're also using other tools, since our network right now doesn't have all the features we need. We hope that at one stage all you have to use is spacedecentral.net to participate, because we actually have noticed that, you know, using one thing for chat, one thing for tasks, another thing for document management, that is definitely something that, you know, can be, you know, a lot of people aren't used to using, like, you know, five different tools to collaborate. So yeah, that's something we want to improve. But for now, you know, like spacedecentral.net, you know, chiming in on the forum can be like the gateway to entry. And then as you become involved in the projects, that's when you can start to use all the other tools. But if you're not actively working on a project, then, you know, there's no need to use the task management tool or other things like that.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for coming back on the show and updating us with all of your activities and what you're doing, plus your own speaking engagements and what you're doing in that field. That seems really interesting as well. And, you know, I hope you guys are very successful, and we'll stay in touch and follow. I do get your newsletter announcements, so I do follow what you're up to. And I look forward to your giving us more information and reporting more progress down the road. And I hope your ideas come to fruition. As I told you during the break, and I say this on the air to a lot of people, I hear lots and lots of good plans talked about on the show, and I see many good plans sent to me in writing, and not a one of them has any capability of being implemented or made real. I mean, and when I say not a one of them, that's not an understatement. I mean, we'd be in the negative counting if we tried to do a tabulation on that. So what intrigues me is that you have a process to at least try to make your ideas and your missions and your concepts become operational. And I think that is really important, because if you just have a great idea and no way to do anything with it, maybe it makes it into the history books, who knows. But you got to do great things with great ideas, I think. So I wish you guys a lot of luck.
Yeah, thank you again for inviting me to the show again, and it's been great talking with you. And yeah, I hope that we can set a new path with our space mission activation process. And yeah, feel free to refer those people that send the ideas to you to send them over to our network instead.
Okay, I will tell them that, and maybe they can get some inspiration or support that way. Safe travels to you when you go overseas later this year and into early next year, and I'll look forward to hearing back from you later on.
Yeah, thank you, and have a good afternoon.
You too. And listeners, that's it. I want to thank all of you for your email. We're back to a full Space Show schedule this week, so we do have programming tomorrow. Alan Stern Wednesday for Where New Horizons Is Now. It is way, way, way out there. And then Friday and Sunday space shows as regular. It's all up on the newsletter and the upcoming show menu, so check us out. Special thanks to Yalda for being with us, and again to all of you. Have a great week. Keep looking up. Goodbye from the Space Show.